As healthcare leaders, we often hear, you can't fix what you can't measure. And no more is this more evident than during the current crisis. Now more than ever, healthcare institutions require a comprehensive, data-driven model utilizing data across departments and disciplines, which enables complex analysis of their practices, including equity. This approach offers lessons for providers and their healthcare delivery administrators in developing focused initiatives to drive policy, refine best practice, and deliver improved outcomes. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva, and welcome to Modern Practice, the podcast for medical and clinical leaders where we face pressing healthcare issues of the day. Joining me today is Lena Patel. Lena, tell us about your background and your current role here at Vizient.
Sure, Tom. Glad to be here, and thanks for having me. I've been at Vizient for over 3 years now and serve as an AVP in the product strategy and management area, specifically over ambulatory solutions. And prior to this, I spent the last decade of my career having the pleasure to serve in roles in hospital and practice administration, most recently at the Ann and Robert H. Lurie Children's Hospital of Chicago, which is the pediatric arm of the Feinberg School of Medicine of Northwestern University. And happy to be here. Thanks again.
And we're glad you're here. Thanks for joining. So let's dive right into it. Lena, can you please tell us how using comparative data across core quality metrics can actually translate into measured improvements?
Absolutely. So number one is how we plan to leverage the data. And perhaps it's to provide insight into performance into an organization's own data. And of course, bringing folks together at your own organization to deliver on the promise of patient-centered care and communication across providers along the continuum. The goal may not be to be the top-ranked organization, and that's just not always going to be feasible. But perhaps you're more like the folks that are either in the middle of the spectrum versus either end. And how can you connect with those organizations to really understand their practice is so important so you can learn from your peers. How do you make these lasting and incremental changes that are sustainable? If you're making changes, understanding the impact of these changes is critical. And no one, as we have learned, has expertise to waste, let alone the talent, the time, the energy. And it's so important to understand that these changes are resulting in desirable patient outcomes. Doing this in an unbiased manner with consistent methodology is so critical. Critical to ensure that you're evaluating the impact of your efforts, which can be done quarterly with our data. And being able to do this across your care sites means everyone has a level playing field, measuring and evaluating the same thing the same way across your organization.
So I get that. It's actually using data for the purposes of being patient-centered, but more importantly, as a means of communication among providers.
Absolutely.
So Lena, historically, quality data in the ambulatory realm has been limited, but there are solutions out there. Vizient has the Clinical Practice Solutions Center.
We examine your medical practice data, and that includes billing data, scheduling data, and in some cases, we link this data with the clinical database that helps us examine care across the patient care continuum. Some of the metrics we examine, and they're not limited to this, but looking at acute condition admissions, such as pneumonia and UTI, we also examine some other chronic condition admissions like diabetes, COPD, or heart failure. We also look at returns to the physician post-inpatient discharge or post-procedure across certain specialties. Other things we do, we are starting to take a deeper dive looking at equity in terms of patient access by specialty and using payer as a proxy.
So that's fantastic, Lena. So what have been the disruptions noted from data due to the pandemic?
Well, certainly, Tom, I think everybody knows patient access. We were forced to limit non-urgent patient visits in the ambulatory and procedural areas for obvious reasons. And on average, across our membership in the CPSC, we saw a 45% drop in volumes with a range between 10 and 60% at certain points in time, either due to patient-related cancellations or clinic-initiated cancellations. We didn't know what to expect. We didn't have sufficient PPE. We weren't initially equipped to serve patients via telehealth at many of our organizations. Outpatient procedures also dropped precipitously in the latter parts of March and April. Colonoscopies, for example, those dropped to 5% of the February volumes. And as of July, we were still down 32% from February. Outpatient ortho also took a hit. Those procedures dropped by 68%. And as of July, we are now seeing approximately 80% of that February volume. In addition to that, go on to screening and preventative testing. Mammography and cervical cytology testing saw a significant decrease. This happened primarily during the lockdown when examining data across more than half of our membership. Mammography dropped 93% during the height of the shelter-in-place period and saw similar trends in pediatric vaccination rates as well. And if you can call it good news. The good news is while we're absolutely seeing recovery due to the lasting impact of COVID-19 in our communities, we still remain at below pre-pandemic normal levels.
Well, that's immensely impactful when you think about the lack of access resulting in marked decrease in procedures, particularly orthopedics, but also a marked decrease in screening and prevention. And I mean, I can't imagine what the long-term effects are going to be from that.
The lasting implications from these disruptions, I think only time will tell. And honestly, what we're seeing too is medical practices are flooded with maintaining their normally scheduled visits, catching up on missed patients, fitting the urgent cases in as well. It's a period of great stress for patients, providers, and their organizations. And like I said, we have yet to see the data on the long-term effects of patients delaying screenings, delaying vaccinations in our peds populations, and obviously what's going to be the impact of elective and non-elective procedures being delayed. You know, I really worry that we'll see more advanced disease at diagnosis as a result, but maybe we won't. Maybe the blip in the radar was just really that, a blip in the radar. And what will be the result of delayed vaccinations in our peds patients? I think first and foremost, I should have said this at the beginning, honestly, we all, and I especially, applaud all of the organizations for all they're doing, especially as they attempt to adapt to virtual care. And whether it's in the ambulatory setting, at home monitoring, wherever it is, we haven't even touched on all the other items that we're trying to deal with in the healthcare environment, like balancing children at home, or the impact we're seeing on mental health for adults and children. And what about the safety net that many organizations provide, such as schools, when it comes to nutrition, DCFS contacts, as well as domestic violence and individuals who aren't able to seek refuge in safer places? There's so many social emotional issues associated with this pandemic, as well as the medical items that we've already talked about. It will continue to stress our system for, I think, longer than we had hoped.
You know, Lena, I live in Miami, Florida, and this is where I practice. During the time of this recording, we're actually at the later end of our current surge. 75% of the patients I'm seeing is actually virtually. I was wondering if there's any data in reference to the acceleration of virtual care.
Well, some organizations were working on telehealth well before the pandemic. I don't think all organizations had a strong or established telehealth program upon which they were able to serve their patients during a non-stressful period. And if they did, in some cases, not all the populations were able to be served in that manner. And so while we did find that during the height of the pandemic, in some cases, over two-thirds of patient visits were performed via telehealth. And as we recovered and figured this out, most organizations are actually going back to in-person visits. So there is a place for both, obviously, in our care models. And I think organizations and providers are learning what they can and can't see virtually, what patients will need to come in, how they come in, how they can leverage their APPs, and also which populations respond to phone only versus video consultations. I think the pandemic has at least forced all of us to become more familiar with our capacity to venture into virtual care, I think faster than we had ever anticipated, out of sheer necessity and safety, honestly.
And I can understand that. You mentioned about the use of APPs, particularly in virtual care. Any data behind that?
Yeah, and while it may be true at some organizations or in pockets, we're not seeing that data overall. APPs performed about 12 to 13% of both the in-person and virtual outpatient care visits consistently. And that's consistently in the pre-COVID-19 period as well as the COVID-19 period so far.
One thing I've noticed about my own practice is because it is virtual and I'm not touching the patient, I'm more inclined to see the patient more often in follow-up. Any data behind that?
Again, I think the data are a little more fuzzy here. That may be true in some cases, but overall, across our membership of participating organizations in the Clinical Practice Solutions Center, we're actually seeing fewer instances where patients had multiple billed encounters by telehealth than by in-person visits looking across 2020 so far.
So Lena, we talked about all these different disruptions. So what actions are required during this early, late pandemic phase or even during the post-pandemic era?
Yeah, healthcare organizations are clearly reeling from reduced revenues from a lack of ambulatory activity, including surgeries, increased costs related to inpatient stays, necessary PPE, and balancing the needs of a very fragile workforce, necessitating a shift in practice in so many cases. And so after all of this disruption and all of this instability, we really have to get on sound ground, which is probably not the same ground that we're used to? How are we going to stabilize in our new normal? What is our new normal? And I think each organization has to understand what they need to do in order to adapt for the long term, to come out and recover from this and define their new normal. And building some level of flexibility in our systems has always been necessary. COVID-19 just tested this to the extremes, and we were not prepared. And frankly, how could we be? I mean, anyone would argue that we couldn't have ever been prepared of something like this. Who would have ever thought that a healthcare pandemic would ruin healthcare in so many ways? And as we learn to adapt, we need to think about how we plan to evolve and what are our diversified revenue streams, what makes the best sense in terms of our outreach to our populations in ways we hadn't thought of before, and really that we should be thinking about doing. We need to right-size our revenue, right-size our patient mix, and that's, of course, critical. And we have to do it all while keeping an eye on quality. Doing all the things we said we were going to do before and the things we were doing before. But now, this has really forced us to be more agile in how we shift.
You know, I get that. When you look at operational leadership and clinical leadership, what's required moving forward is stability, adaption, and then evolve. It's not like things used to be. This ends part one of our discussion. Lena, thanks for joining us. In the next podcast, we'll actually delve a little bit deeper into this issue. Please join us for other Modern Practice podcasts on the Vizient Medical Leadership Channel. Subscribe today, like us, or send us your comments. And also please listen and subscribe to SG2 Perspectives, the podcast for the latest in healthcare strategy. I'm Dr. Tom Villanueva. Thanks for listening.